It's hour number three of Shirts and Skins with Trey and Chad on vacay. At 2:45, it's Stems and Seeds. Golf has crowned its first major winner of the year, and boy, did he take it home in clutch style. At 2:30, why August 10th matters, including a celebration of one of the all-time great desserts, as long as it's done correctly. And in mere minutes, it's my conversation with actor Robert Patrick. I'm Trey Elling. Sam Pica is behind the glass. Yes, Chad Hastings is on vacation again this week. You can comment on anything that you hear on this program by texting in. The Specs text line is 337-3776. Please do give me a follow on Twitter as well, at Courtesy Wave. We will get back to sports in a few minutes, including the latest on college football as that season hangs in the balance, at least for the fall of 2020. Things may get pushed back to 2021. We're going to take a break from sports right now, though, and going to the Vaqueros hotline to speak with actor Robert Patrick. His credits include Striptease, The Sopranos, X-Files, Flags of Our Fathers, Trouble with the Curve, and, of course, playing the T-1000 in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. He was in town for Anthony Michael Hall's Summer Drive-In Movie Fest. There was a double screening of T2, followed by The Dark Knight with a T2 roundtable in between that included Robert, Edward Furlong, and Danny Cooksey. You can actually get more info for the final weekend of Anthony Michael Hall's Drive-In Movie Fest at evocinemas.com. They have some screenings on Friday in Kyle and on Saturday in Shirts. Robert, thank you so much for the time. How are you doing today?
Doing really well, buddy. I'm inside the air conditioning.
Did I understand this correctly, that you actually rode your motorcycle from California to get here?
I rode my motorcycle, my Harley Davidson 2020 Road Glide Limited, across the country to get to Austin, Texas.
So I've made that
drive. Let me tell you what, it's like riding an oven out there.
I bet, because I've made that drive before in a car, and I believe it took us a two full days. How long did that take for you, and how do you feel after being on the bike for that many straight days?
Well, what I did was I strategized a little bit. I left at 3 a.m. in the morning from my house and rode to the hotel in Tucson and got there about midday, and it was about 107. So I had a few hours of pleasant riding conditions and then some really just awful, awful riding conditions where you had to stop every 50 miles and hydrate. I carry a water bottle and some liquid IV and some Gatorade, and I stop every 50 miles and hydrate and cool off and get back on it and do it. But it's arduous, but it's a mission. It's something I enjoy. I like riding, especially Harley Davidsons.
Yeah, and you've done a lot to really help out the less fortunate through motorcycle riding over the years with the club that you're a part of too, correct?
Oh, yeah, the Booze Fighters Motorcycle Club. And you have a chapter here in Austin, and we do a lot of things for veterans and children during Christmas, fundraisers, toys. Yeah, it's a motorcycle club that was founded by some veterans coming home from World War II in 1946. And it's the only motorcycle club that's got a permanent exhibit at the Harley-Davidson Museum in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Very cool. Well, this is a fun event that you're taking part in over the weekend with Anthony Michael Hall's Summer Drive-In Movie Fest at Evo Cinemas. Have you and Anthony Michael Hall worked together before? And if not, how do you know one another?
Well, we've met. I'm a huge fan of his work. Obviously, I know him from his younger days, being a part of that Brat Pack and whatnot. But I'm a huge fan of his more mature work, especially the film he did with Brad Pitt. He was incredible in that film. And we've met, and I was flattered that he invited me to be a part of this event. Austin is a great city for me. I've been here many times, made many films here. I've sung with Alejandro Escovedo twice at the Moody Theater in Austin and been a part of his Austin Storyteller Nights. I'm a huge fan of Austin, Texas. Matter of fact, I've made some movies with Robert Rodriguez here.
Yep, Spy Kids.
And, Spy Kids, The Faculty. I did From Dusk Till Dawn, the TV series for his El Rey network. So, yeah, I really love Austin, Texas. It's a great city. It's really growing as well. Where I'm sitting right now, I can see 8 cranes out there building tall buildings in downtown Austin.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. The downtown landscape is changing quite a bit. Now, you just mentioned performing musically on stage with Alejandro Escovedo. Is there a different set of nerves that comes into play for you in a situation like that versus some of the acting that you've done over the last 30-plus years?
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a cousin that lives here that's a musician with a lot of the bands here at Austin, musician Michael St. Clair. And we have a lot of music in my family. Of course, my brother, Richard Patrick, who was the original guitarist for Nine Inch Nails, and then later went on to be a platinum recording artist with Filter. So, I've always admired my brother and my cousin, and I got the opportunity to come down and perform with Alejandro and sing. You know, I went to a singing coach, a vocal coach for a while and got myself prepped. I enjoyed it and I liked it very much, but to actually get up on stage and perform, it's a daunting task. But as an actor, you just convince yourself that you can do it and you get up there and you do it. It's kind of almost like you assume a character and you walk out on stage and say, okay, I'm a rock star. Here I go. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's really cool. Now, regarding your brother Richard, I couldn't even begin to tell you how many times I've screamed the chorus to Hey Man, Nice Shot while speeding down the road. What is your favorite song of your brother's?
Well, I think that's a great song. I think he has some other great songs out there. But Hey Man is certainly a moment in time, and it is an awesome song. There's a couple other that I like as well. Dose is a really good one. Mm-hmm. So I Quit, I performed with my brother on stage in Dallas, Texas.
Wow.
When he was touring with Bush, I believe. Bush and Filter were touring, and I jumped up on stage. You can find that on YouTube. It's quite humorous. The things I did with Alejandro are beautiful. We did some Leonard Cohen songs, and we did a song from a film I produced. And my brother wrote a track for that. The film is called Last Rampage. Hmm. And we needed a needle drop, and he wrote this Southern rock kind of feeling song called Oh Lord. And that was the song I performed the second time I was out here with Alejandro. He's one of my favorite artists of all times, and I know he's a big part of the Austin music scene here, so it was a real honor.
Speaking with actor Robert Patrick, now, you were in a Nine Inch Nails video, I believe, in the early to mid-90s.
Yeah, I don't think that's me. I heard that, and I hear it, and I got to be honest with you, Trey, I don't recall doing it. So there's some sort of rumor out there, man.
Well, you know what? That's why you always need to cross-check what you read on the Internet. Even if you see something on IMDb or Wikipedia, it certainly doesn't mean that it's true.
Yeah, and Trey, you know, speaking to that, and I'm certainly not trying to embarrass you at all, it's so true. My Wikipedia page, I have checked it recently, and I found out that I'm a junior, which is not true. So, you know, I'm not a junior. Who writes this stuff? Who's responsible for this stuff, Trey?
Okay.
And then it's on my IMDb page. I look at my IMDb page, and I say, holy shit, it's on there, too. How long has it been like? Pardon my language. How long has that been like that? I'm not a junior, for crying out loud.
You're free to use whatever language you want, Robert. Okay, so let me do some fact checking.
Are we on the radio live, by the way?
No, this is recorded, so you can use whatever gratuitous language you want, and I'm happy to edit it. So let me ask you about a couple of different things that I read on your Wikipedia page. Because this is a sports radio station that you're appearing on, after all.
You think there'll ever be football like it used to be?
I don't know, man. At this point, I'm starting to get a little bit concerned. I mean, schools are obviously in disarray. The whole sports thing has taken a totally different shape. You know, my cohorts are loving sports being back. I got to admit it to you, though. I'm having a hard time watching sports without fans. The fans do impact the enjoyment of watching games on television for me.
Yeah, it's not the same thing.
Now, Wikipedia says that you went to Bowling Green for at least a year and played football. Did you play football in college? And if so, what was your position?
It is true, but let me just go ahead and give you the very sincere what happened. I went to Bowling Green. I walked on. I was invited to walk on. I walked on to the football team. I was a linebacker and a fullback when I was in high school. I was all-conference honorable mention, all-state honorable mention linebacker, fullback. And I went there, walked on, and got out there and started doing summer ball. And sometime during that summer ball, during the hitting and realizing that there were a lot of redshirt freshmen around and finding out that this guy had a knee surgery and this guy had a knee surgery, and I realized I was going to be a scout team guy. And then you just feel like meat on the hoof. You realize that, you know, they're going to just beat the hell out of me.
Yeah.
And I took a couple of hits, and I really started to do the math in my head. I got a 4.7 40. I'm 215. How much heart do I have for this? I don't know. I just feel like I'm food for fodder here. And it was there. I took one big hit, and I went, nah, this is just not in the cards for me. I don't have the heart to play anymore. And it was a devastating thing for me because I loved football. But to realize that it's going to take a super effort, and I was just smart enough to realize that I just don't have the passion, and I got to get out. And I should get out before I really get injured. And I walked away. It was a real pivotal moment in my life. Because I didn't know what to do after that, you know.
What helped you to figure that out?
Well, I tell you, I did have the sense to sit in on some drama classes at Bowling Green. I realized I didn't know why I was going to school. I had no idea what I really wanted to do. And, you know, with a lot of self-analysis of, you know, who I was and trying to figure out what I wanted to do, I came up with this idea that I wanted to be an actor. That's what I really wanted to do. I had a limited amount of experience acting, but I had enjoyed it, and that's where it all kind of came together.
I certainly want to ask about the acting career, but I also wanted to fact check one more thing that I've read online, because
sure.
This is truly an incredible couple of sentences that I read multiple places, but there's not a whole lot of details about this. Mm-hmm. I saw a snippet about you online that in 1984... you were in a boat accident on Lake Erie and stayed in the water for a long time afterwards, helping others stranded on the lake. What exactly happened there?
Well, this was all during that time when I was really trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I had taken a lot of jobs, and there was a lot of different work that I was doing. I wanted to be an actor, and I was kind of afraid of the whole concept of how do I get started? I don't know anybody, and that whole kind of a thing. And I tell you, God has an interesting way of communicating with you. And he literally put me on a boat, and the boat sank, and it was, you got to swim. You know, you're going to have to save yourself. You're going to have to save everybody. And it couldn't have hit me at a better time, because a metaphor of stormy waters in one's life, and then to be thrown off a boat and realize, well, it's up to you to do what you want to do, and you better get to it because you're not doing it. It really hit me hard. I swam for 3.5 hours and was able to get another boat and go back and locate the four of the people that were with me on the boat. We saved everybody's lives. But that swim, I set a date for when I was going to go to Hollywood, and I moved shortly thereafter, not knowing anybody and living in my car and trying to pursue my career. So that is a true story.
So you literally swam for 3.5 hours to go find another boat to rescue everybody else.
Yeah, I left. We were off the coast of Cleveland and Lake Erie, and it literally in the water, a sailboat sank. I grabbed a life preserver and put it on. Another guy swam with me. I put him on one of those big Great Lakes merchant marine buoys that are out there. Those things are huge, by the way, because he was so fatigued. And the rest of them were floating with whatever had come up from the boat. This was a 30-foot dragon slayer with a 29-foot mast and a 4-ton keel that had just completely been engulfed in a quick storm on the Great Lakes. 3.5 hours. I swam into the break wall, came over the break wall, and was in the Euclid Yacht Club on the east side of Cleveland, and swam in there, and there were some guys in there at the bar. There was two guys in there watching TV at the bar, I remember, and I was physically cramped all over, and I staggered in there saying, there's a boat that sank. I need some help. There's four other guys out there. they ran. I ran. We got on a boat. They called the Coast Guard, and we went out and we saved everybody. One of my younger brothers was the last guy we saved.
That is incredible.
By the time we got out there, they'd all split up. They thought I didn't make it, so they all started trying to swim themselves. That was a mess.
Holy cow.
Yeah, it was a real mess. But we got everybody, thank God.
Very thankful
for
that.
When the boat sank, I was bailing water. It was an open wet deck. And I was bailing water with a cooler, just trying to get it out. And the poor guy, that his boat, a friend of mine, he was going into shock. And, you know, the boat just got swallowed under a big wave. And it was gone. And we were 3 miles off the coast of Cleveland, in the middle of Lake Erie.
Well, that is
scary
crazy.
Thing, man. It's amazing. But for some reason, I just knew I didn't want to drown out there, and I didn't want to float out there, and I didn't want to go to Canada, you know. But it's amazing how, you know, God can communicate with you like that, you know, and just set you straight and set you right on your course.
Well, honestly, reading a little bit more about you last night in preparation for this conversation and seeing all that you do for the community and for the troops and so many other people, where you are wielding your influence as this celebrity in a positive manner to make other people's lives better. Ultimately, it's not surprising to hear that that story is true. So kudos on the decisions that you made that day.
Thank you, Trey. Thank you. Very kind of you. And it's very kind of you to take an interest in wanting to do this interview. So.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We're speaking with actor Robert Patrick. So you're obviously most well known for playing one of the all-time great bad guys in movie history as the T-1000 in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. That was actually the first R-rated movie I ever saw in the theater. I'm curious, what was the first thing you ever saw where you knew you were a bit too young for?
That's a good one. Well, my dad took me to see A Space Oddity, 2001.
Yeah.
The Stanley Kubrick movie. And that was some pretty heady stuff for a kid to see. I think I was much younger than 13. I don't even know if it's an R-rated movie, but it was a heady movie that was like, oh my God, even to this day, watching it and trying to figure out what the message is, if there is a message. That film in particular is kind of terrifying in its concepts. So I remember watching that movie. My parents were big movie fans, and I think in some weird way that's one of the reasons why I wanted to become an actor. Perhaps my parents might take an interest in what I was doing. I had to perform for my parents. Interestingly.
You were so good in that role for a variety of reasons. Your look, how you spoke, the way you moved, and even ran. IMDb actually says that some of this was animal-inspired. Is it true that you were mimicking a bald eagle with your head movements and patterning yourself after a shark when moving through crowds?
Yeah, it all started. Also, a praying mantis was one of the other things we started thinking about. And a cat. The audition process for it was, you know, create this intense presence. And I hadn't read the script, and immediately, what do I go to? How do I create an intense presence? And as an actor, you look at organic stuff that you can mimic, and you can physically take on characteristics that will help you convey that emotion. And creating an intense presence. So I immediately started thinking of, what are the things that are intense that have a presence? Number one, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when you start physically thinking about nature and what's out there as far as prey and predators, and what do predators look like? So I started thinking about that immediately, and all that flushed into my brain was the intense stare of an eagle. And the beak and the constant forward motion of that look, and how do I personify that and take on that mannerism? So that's where all that kind of came from. The movement of a shark underwater, how it swims through effortlessly, and it's all that power and subtle, kind of made me slow things down and think of myself being underwater and moving my head very slowly, and the eyes, the way I gazed. And it's interesting to me because it's such a highly sophisticated apparatus, you know, the T-1000 liquid metal machine, that the software that I was using, the Actor, was organic and natural. And then I discussed that with Jim, and he loved that theme as well. And we started really exploring that idea that the predatory software used to program the T-1000 came from the natural order. That's where that all kind of came from. So you physically start to take on those mannerisms. And it became pretty much a checklist for me of how I got into character every day for the T-1000. And I think that's why 30 years later, people still love the movie. And it's a performance that'll be with me forever. And I'm incredibly proud of it.
You know, it's interesting because somebody who makes himself so well known for whether it's like a role or a song or something along those lines, some people try really hard to escape that while others embrace it. And I read Scott Pelley's memoir a couple years ago, and he talked about speaking with members of Bruce Springsteen's band about some of the most popular songs that they pretty much play at every show. And he's like, "Do you guys ever get tired of playing those songs?" And they're like, "Well, maybe," but then we realized that that was kind of the golden ticket for us, and why would we try and run away from something that we need to be that appreciative of? Is that kind of how you look at it, too?
Yeah, that is now. That's much healthier a way to do it. Eddie Furlong and myself, both being unknown guys when we made that movie, we were sort of thrust into this situation where all of a sudden we're very recognizable from this movie, and very little is known about us. And it's fame and adulation and attention are daunting if you're not prepared for it. And we both had our ways of dealing with it. I unfortunately kind of got hung up with abusing alcohol and certain other drugs, and had 4 years of heavy abuse of alcohol, and it was my way of protecting myself from it. And my career suffered. Part of it was how to overcome such a big success. And you find yourself trying to prove yourself and prove that you can do other things and that you are an actor and that was just a character. And you have more to offer than just that. And you could get caught up in that. And I regret having 4 years of drug and alcohol abuse after the fact, and I'm really happy that I have 24 years of sobriety right now, and my career is doing a hell of a lot better. We've been able to do a lot more things and many diverse roles and other things, and I'm embraced the fact that I am the T-1000 and incredibly grateful for the fact that I have it on my resume. And continuing to think that there's something really, really even better for me down the road. You know, staying optimistic that there's even a bigger movie for me down the road. You have to do that to keep going, to keep staying motivated. Okay. So I'm incredibly proud of it, but I'm incredibly proud of movies like Copland and Walk the Line and my 2 years on The X-Files I'm very proud of. And I'm recently proud of Scorpion, the TV show I did for CBS for 5 years or 4 years, The Sopranos. And yeah, so we've got a lot of diverse work out there. It's whether or not people see it all and realize it's the same guy. Now, that's a different story.
Okay, I'm going to give you a couple of examples that prove that it is all relative about the viewer, because you just listed a bunch of great stuff that you were in, but you missed two things that I absolutely loved you in. One, you had a slightly bigger role. The other was a bit more of a cameo. We'll start with, and I'm thinking about the timeline that you just gave me, that 4 years. You were hilarious in Striptease. Where does that Daryl character, the wheelchair thief and ex-husband of Demi Moore, rank among your favorite roles? And was that the starting point of you really coming out the other side of some of those substance issues?
It's funny that you would bring that up. That was the movie where it was actually Demi Moore that kind of alluded to the fact that I might have a problem with alcohol.
Oh, wow.
And a friend of hers, Judy Turner, that I talked to, led me to do some personal analysis and realize that I think I did. And It's funny that you would mention that because you hit it right on the head. I was drinking pretty heavy while I was making that movie. And I love Daryl. He was a wild guy. He was a great character. And I love that movie. I loved working with Burt Reynolds. I loved working with Demi and some great people, Ving Rhames. It was really a lot of fun.
That movie is literally one of the most underrated comedies of the 1990s. I have no question about that.
I am so happy to hear you say that, Trey. Thank you. It's a Carl Hiaasen novel, and it's a very funny novel. He's a great writer.
Speaking with actor Robert Patrick, okay, I'm going to bring up another very funny movie from 2008 sure. that you were a part of. Now, I don't know if this is true or not, but I read yesterday that your first full frontal nudity scene was in Terminator 2. And you actually had a second quote-unquote full frontal nudity scene, although I'm assuming that it was a prosthetic being worn by a body double. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
Strange Wilderness.
That's right. That campfire scene is hilarious because of you, Robert. Is that the strangest thing you've ever had to say in a role?
That is the craziest movie I've ever done in my life. And I had so much fun doing it, and I'm going to comment on that because if anybody has seen that movie, that is not my package. Okay.
I assumed it wasn't.
It's not. That was a package worn by a stand-in double for me because it was scarred. You've got to see the movie.
I think the story was is that your testicles fell out of the and you picked them up and had to sew them back into place, correct?
Yeah, exactly. The local pygmies, can't remember who they were. They cut open my scrotum and my fell to the dirt, and I scooped them up out of the dirt with my hands, tucked them back in, and stitched myself back up. Something to that effect. And then I dropped my pants, and they all look and just, they're horrified. This unbelievably grotesque-looking package there. Yeah, that's terrible.
So I read this also, and maybe this is the last fact check for us before I bid you adieu. I read that the appearance of the Dale Gribble character in King of the Hill is based on you. Have you ever discussed this with Mike Judge?
I have not. I know he's a friend of Robert Rodriguez. I do think we were in the same movie together. I don't know if I met him. I believe I did. And I don't know if the character came after that meeting or not. So that one I'm not certain on. I'm not certain. I'm thinking he's in Spy Kids. So if Spy Kids and when he created that role are simultaneous, then maybe. But I don't know. I can't confirm that. And he would be the one to ask.
That's true. If I ever get Mike Judge on, I will certainly ask him that. And last thing,
I'm sure you will. He's a local guy.
He is, and I've made a couple of runs at him before, but no luck so far. Hopefully one day. And last thing, you mentioned
what
that
about
you...
Robert Rodriguez?
I've tried to get Robert Rodriguez on as well. I don't know if those guys are just too busy making films and writing scripts and whatnot, but neither guy has joined me just yet. But I'm thankful that you, sir, have, and I know you've been a part of South by Southwest in the past, and that's really cool, and all the time that you spent here in Austin as well. Last thing for you, Robert, you mentioned being a part of X-Files for seasons 8 and 9. There are some really weird things going on right now with our government essentially admitting the existence of UFOs and providing video evidence. Do you believe in aliens?
You know, I got to tell you, I believe in God, and I believe it's a huge universe, and I guess I can believe that there may be some other creation out there, and I hope that doesn't go against my belief in God. It's so vast, and the potential for something to be out there, I guess, is inevitable. The revelations of recent days or weeks, whatnot, that the Pentagon has released, the fact that the USOs are real and there are certain things they've been following, there's more that's going to come. It's going to blow everybody's mind. But I think a lot of people have been thinking about this for quite a while. Perhaps part of the government's job is to protect us from some of these heavy concepts that would just blow our mind. We wouldn't be able to function as people if we knew about some of the threats that are out here. I don't know what's better for us. Life has changed so drastically with this COVID virus. Who knew what an impact it was going to have on us? But, man, 2020 has been a hell of a bad year.
It's been
maybe the next thing to drop would be the fact that, yeah, by the way, aliens are real. You know, what are we going to do with that? I mean, that's just, are you kidding me? Wow, man, what a trip. It's an exciting time to be alive, Trey.
No doubt about that. And what a trip this conversation has been for the last 30 minutes or so. He is Robert Patrick, an actor whose credits include Striptease, The Sopranos, X-Files, Flags of Our Fathers, Trouble with the Curve, and, of course, playing the T-1000 in Terminator 2 Judgment Day. He's also in town for Anthony Michael Hall's Summer Drive-In Movie Fest, a double screening of T2, followed by The Dark Knight with a T2 roundtable in between that includes Robert, Edward Furlong, and Danny Cooksey. You can actually find more info at evocinemas.com. Robert, thank you so much for the time today. Really enjoyed the conversation, and safe travels back to California when this weekend's done.
Trey, I'll be riding back on a more northern route. It has certainly been a great time talking with you. Thank you so much for your interest in my career, and I look forward to meeting you someday.
Pleasure, sir. I look forward to that as well.
All right, buddy.
Take care.
God bless.
Coming up, why August 10th matters, including a celebration of one of the all-time great desserts, but you have to do it right. I'll tell you what I'm talking about coming up next. All right, back here on Shirts and Skins with Chad and Trey. Chad Hastings on vacation. Sam Pika is helping out behind the glass. It's just after 2:30, so it's time for Why August 10th Matters, and it's sponsored.
Why Today Matters, brought to you by Sinus and Snoring Specialist. Get sinus and snoring relief with Dr. Daniel Slaughter at Sinus and Snoring Specialist, 512-601-0303 or sinussnoringent.com.
Sam, are you somebody who spends the night outside all that often? Camping out, things like that.
Oh, yeah, I love camping. That's actually something that might surprise you.
It does surprise me.
I enjoy the outdoors.
It does surprise me. You strike me as somebody who shuts yourself in when you're not here at work playing video games and getting wasted.
Oh, well, I'm still definitely getting wasted at the campgrounds.
That's true.
I don't even like when I go camping, I don't bring that much. I'm totally the kind of dude, you know, we'll have some food, we'll have the water. But other than that, we're cutting down trees, we're doing everything we need to do out there. Because that's the fun part of it, man, the surviving.
I love everything about camping except for the sleeping outside, the having to go number two outside.
That's the best part.
The hanging out outside, the bugs, the possibility of being attacked by bears. I pretty much like everything about camping except for camping itself.
Okay.
And if I were to have to power rank the enjoyable things about camping, I don't know if I could get to five total items, but I do know of one list that would be, or one item that would be on that list. And that is something that's being celebrated today. Today is National S'mores Day.
Ooh, okay.
Where does s'mores rank for you in terms of the enjoyment of camping out?
I definitely like pooping outside better.
It's after?
Yeah, it's after pooping outside. How do you not like pooping outside, bro?
Because I've had the luxury that is modern toilet amenities.
But you're standing there in the crisp morning air. You see the sun rising. You know, you feel that little bit, you know, coming out of you, man. That's the dream come true.
Digging a hole, leaning up against the bark of a tree, making business happen, and then having to cover the hole up? No, that is not appealing to me at all.
That's your problem. First off, you should just start out by digging one large hole, and then every time you go, you cover that up. You know, you're not filling up the whole hole. You're progressively going. That is your bathroom for the entire trip, and then by the time you're gone, that's when you just cover the whole hole up and call it a day.
Well, congratulations. You have created a camping porta-pot there.
Yeah.
You're just going over the top of your previously done business. No. Find a different hole each time. I don't want to be anywhere near the fecal material that's probably still lingering.
The dirt covers it. You don't even smell it once you cover it up.
Oh, like dirt is kitty litter or something.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm kicking it over the top and getting it done.
Okay, how are you as a s'mores maker? Like, what's your strategy with the s'more? Some people love lighting the marshmallow on fire.
I think that's not the move.
You can do that, but you have to be very careful about that.
I have never been able to light the marshmallow on fire and not have it fall off of my stick.
That's part of the problem. You also don't want to char the marshmallow. You char the marshmallow, it's gone too far. You want to brown the marshmallow. You want the marshmallow to essentially caramelize on the outside, which is that golden brown color.
Yeah.
That is so hard to upset. It's a fine line to go from uncooked marshmallow to overcooked marshmallow.
Have you ever made, like, at-home s'mores on your oven? You ever just roast a marshmallow over your stove top?
No.
Really?
Why would I do that?
Because you want a s'more and you're not camping.
I'm just going to go start the grill and do it over the grill or something.
Grilling marshmallows? This is so much easier. You just turn your stove on, man, and let it go.
I don't know. I feel like you need the fire element of the marshmallow and the outdoor element of the s'more process to really enjoy that. And then also, this is another important element because I am a world-class s'more maker.
Really?
You'll find this out about me in the rare occasion that we are outside creating desserts, but now that I have kids, it's like a must do if we're anywhere near outside. And I've never taken my kids camping before.
Lame.
But, well, yeah, lame. But they're also going to appreciate modern amenities, which is going to go great until the apocalypse hits and we're all forced outside like in The Walking Dead.
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't the camping going to make them appreciate their modern amenities even more?
It probably will, and maybe at some point we end up trying the camping thing, and I spend way too much money on equipment that we never use again, which is part of the problem here. It's not like I've built up equipment over the last 15 to 20 years of my life. I'd be starting from scratch, so we're either having to borrow somebody's equipment, or I'm making a heavy investment in something that there's a good chance we never use again.
What do you need equipment-wise? You literally need, like, a pot, a knife, and an axe. That's about all you need. Something to start a fire, like a lighter.
A tent?
Yeah, okay, a tent. But I mean, that's
sleeping
like the
sleeping bags?
Sleeping bags are debatable.
Debatable?
Yeah, if you're in the tent and you got a blanket or something, you know, I've roughed it like that before.
Yeah, but I'm not, you know, some 19-year-old 20. I know you're 21 now. I'm not some kid in his late teens or early 20s. My body can't handle just laying on the ground.
Why not?
Because it hurts.
You're going to die.
You're going to find out this hard lesson pretty soon, Sam. You need to be comfortable to actually sleep well. I know you can just pass out on the living room floor right now and feel like you've gotten a good night's sleep 13 hours later. That doesn't work for all of us after a certain age.
I have in the last week actually gotten a good floor nap in, so that is fair to say.
Have you ever pulled the move where you just flop down onto your bed after a long night of whatever, and you wake up in the morning and you are still fully dressed, shoes included?
You mean this morning when I woke up? Yes. Yes, I have.
The Sunday going into Monday version of that. That's awesome. So yes, today is National S'mores Day. Do that with that what you will. Today is also Spoil Your Dog Day, which is a day that hurts for me a little bit as a guy who lost his dog
right
in the last couple of weeks. 2 weeks ago today, as a matter of fact. So if you have a dog out there, spoil him. I still have one dog at home. I try to love this dog. He's a total Disney dog. He's a sweetheart, but he's not as good as Walter was. And so, well, figure out a way to spoil him, maybe by actually petting him a couple of times today.
Spoil Your Dog Day should be every day.
Yeah, that's
right?
That's the other thing. I mean, how spoiled are most dogs' lives? And we're not talking about the dogs living with the hobos under the bridge at 183 in Burnett. The Sarah McLachlan dogs, exactly. We're talking about most dogs living in households get lots of human food off the table. You pretty much just get to, I don't know, sleep and lick yourself all day?
I mean, I basically do that anyways.
Well, if you can do the latter, I am more impressed with you than I realized starting this segment.
My parents recently got a new dog, and I went over to meet the thing, and they are treating it absolutely different than any other dog I have ever seen them own.
Better or worse?
Much better. Mm. So much better. Not that they treated the other dogs bad, but you know, this one pees on the floor. The other dogs, what I've always heard and that you're supposed to do in training them is, you know, you go over, you shove their nose in it, you scream at them a little bit. This one peed on the floor. They go, oh, you know better than that. It's a puppy, mind you. It's like not even a month or two old, maybe.
Got to crate train this bad boy.
That's what I'm saying. And they're so much nicer to it than it's so crazy just seeing how hard this dog is going to walk all over them.
We're already going down the road of getting a puppy in
really?
Our household. I discussed it with Justine a couple of days after Walter died, and we agreed that it wasn't a decision we were going to rush into. We'd take a couple months, mourn, and then maybe we'd consider it. I swear to you, every day since then, I received pictures from local shelters of the newest little guy that they've gotten in. And Justine's like, how cute is he? And I'm like, oh, it's only a matter of time. I mean, in the next couple of weeks, we are going to have a second dog in our house again.
Do y'all have a type of pupper picked out yet?
I'd probably like to go with something that looks like how Walter looks, like a lab mix or a pure lab retriever, whatever else. We've also considered a German Shepherd. Talked to this guy over the weekend. His Shepherd, which is a female, just had pups, and she was knocked up by a Shepherd. So I told him to stay in touch. I think they can give them away after 8 or 12 weeks or something like that. So that's a possibility too. But I think ultimately when it's all said and done, we go yellow lab. Although, found this out in the last week, and I don't feel good about this for society considering everything that's happened over the last few months and the George Floyd murder and everything else. Apparently, dark-coated dogs are stereotyped big time, discriminated against big time.
What?
Yeah.
Wait, for what?
Last dogs picked out of the shelter, they're the dogs who tend to deal with the most abuse. Like, it was sad. It has me considering going chocolate or black lab now. Now, our other dog is a black lab shepherd mix. So we already have one dark fur dog in our household. So do we just go with the second now? Or do we stick with my dream of getting back to the yellow lab business?
Yeah, that just doesn't even make sense to me because there's no superstitions tied to black dogs. Like, you know, I get the black cat thing. Some people don't want to own a black cat because that's bad luck and, you know, voodoo and whatnot. But why the black dog? What did that do?
There is something psychological about dark colors versus light colors for a lot of people. They've done the research before, and there's just an inherent bias that comes into play for a lot of people when it comes to just seeing the color black versus the color white and what that represents subconsciously.
Trash.
It's very, very strange, and we try not to do that. But then again, I've also been on the record on these airwaves with loving my yellow lab more than I do my black dog right now. The yellow lab's the one that died. All right, that is it for Why August 10th Matters. Coming up at Stems and Seeds, including a recap of the roller coaster ride of a day in college football. A lot of pushback coming now from players and coaches out of the Big Ten trying to save the season for this fall. You're listening to Shirts and Skins. Chad Hastings on vacation on the Horn. Oh, I thought we were going to get Mr. Withers' voice himself, but still good musical bed nonetheless. Thank you to Sam Pika for helping out all afternoon. He'll be here all week long because Chad Hastings is not a part of this week's Shirts and Skins shows. No worries, though. We have some special guests on tap. That includes, I think, still need to do final confirmation here, but Jeff Ward may very well be joining me tomorrow from 1 to 2. Also have Bucky Godbolt in studio on Thursday for the entire show. We're going to review Scarface, the movie Scarface, at 1 o'clock. That's because the guy who wrote Scarface, perhaps you didn't realize this, Oliver Stone wrote Scarface. He is joining this program Thursday at 2 o'clock. I recorded the conversation last week. It is a phenomenal conversation. We cover a lot of different things, including his love for the 49ers and whether or not he believes that San Francisco can shake the Super Bowl runner-up curse that seems to strike teams and really drop them back down to earth the following season, and also whether he's a believer in Jimmy Garoppolo or not. Again, that's coming up Thursday at 2 o'clock. Right now, though, because we're just after 2:45, it is time for Stems and Seeds. No stress, no seeds, no stems, no sticks. Stems and Seeds brought to you by Audiovisual Consultations, avconsultations.com. 255-8678 is the phone number. Need to remind you, Audiovisual Consultations is helping to sponsor the Donut Eating Challenge That is a week from tomorrow. It is going to be at the end of next Tuesday's program, where Chad Hastings tries to eat 10 donuts in 5 minutes. Tom McKay will likely be on hand, and BK will jump in studio with me to help do play-by-play. I'm providing color commentary for the final segment of next Tuesday's Shirts and Skins, so stay tuned for that. We started out today's show talking about the craziness from the world of college football starting on Saturday when the MAC announced that they were postponing all fall sports until the spring, including football, of course. That was followed by reports that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 were very close to suspending football in 2020 as well, pushing that back to the spring. And we actually had a report this morning that was first given out by Dan Patrick regarding a decision that had been made by the Big Ten earlier today.
Here's the information I got almost an hour ago. The Big Ten and Pac-12 will cancel their football seasons tomorrow. The ACC and the Big 12 are on the fence. The SEC is trying to get a delay to have teams join them. The SEC is looking at exclusive TV contracts. And I followed up by saying, so the SEC might go alone and bring in other schools. That's the latest. They're trying to buy time, according to my source, to see if the ACC or Big 12 will go along with them.
Things have only gotten more insane since then. We've had reports come out that the presidents and chancellors did not actually vote this morning, that 12-2 vote. We have had Ohio State and Michigan football Twitter retweeting players using the hashtag we want to play this year. We've had Ryan Day, yes, the head coach at Ohio State, he has come out and made a statement on Twitter saying that we are essentially going to fight to try and play the season this fall. James Franklin, Penn State's head coach, tweeted about 45 minutes ago, I love our players and believe it's my responsibility to help them chase their dreams, both collectively and individually. I'm willing to fight with them and for our program. Jim Harbaugh has come out with a list of reasons why it's healthier for college football players to actually play the sport this fall versus waiting until the spring. And Scott Frost has given the most wide-ranging comments in terms of actually putting his voice out there, and these have been rehashed for me on Twitter via Twitter's failing me right now, Sam.
Hey, we really did come full circle, just like the first segment. Twitter broke again.
Here we go. Via Mitch Sherman, who covers Nebraska for The Athletic, Scott Frost he conducted a Zoom call a little bit more than an hour ago. He started it out with this. It's time to kind of be a little more upfront about how we feel about things. What does this world look like without football? Another quote. The virus is here either way. I would contend that our players are safer here. Another quote. I think our university is committed to playing football any way that we possibly can, regardless of what anyone else does. Says that if Nebraska can't play in the Big Ten, they're prepared to look at other options. Scott Frost again. It seems like we're looking for a lot of reasons not to play. Frost also says, if we don't play football, we're not going to be able to pay for anything until we start making money again. And he went on and basically hammered home the point that they are going to try really hard to play. We're also seeing reports now that leagues like the Big 12 are looking at poaching Michigan, Ohio State, perhaps Nebraska, to expand the conference even if for a single season, to try and make college football happen this fall. So while things may have seemed pretty dire this morning, it looks like players and coaches alike are fighting back. And this wild week, which started with a bang, is likely only going to get crazier throughout the course of things. Stay tuned. You know that the triple option with RBKD will keep you in the know on all of that, give their analysis on things, and also talk about the Horn College Football Top 20, number 20 team, the Iowa State Cyclones. The Horn College Football Top 20, sponsored by Allstat Beer. Thank you to everybody for participating today. That includes Joe Cook, Bryce Weiland, and also Robert Patrick, the actor. Thanks also to Sam Pika for hanging out today. Chad Hastings on vacation all week long. Until then, I am Trey Elling. This is Shirts and Skins, and you're listening to The Horn. Oh.